and welcome to The Runs, the podcast in which we talk about runs of comic books. This week, I'll be talking about Dwayne McDuffie and M.D. Bright's run of Icon. We'll do the first six issues. And my guest this week is Ron L. Whitaker.
Hello, hello, hello.
Hey, nice to have you. So for the few of you that don't know, Ron L. is an educator, administrator, and a comics in the classroom advocate. He blogs at thecomicbookteacher.com. He's a founding member of LitX, an educational cohort working to help educators teach with contemporary forms of literacy, which, of course, includes comics.
Yeah, I mean, comics, video games, movies, all kind of stuff. You know, we're all about bringing stuff that is culturally relevant to kids into the classroom and hopefully getting them to buy into more of what they're supposed to be learning.
Sounds good. Yes, I'm definitely. So, yeah, I usually talk about context a little bit with guests, and I think you're the first person I've had on the show that I do not know at all. We've never spoken before.
Yeah, we're just like the you know, in Instagram mutuals, right? Like it's like that ships in the night type deal.
Yeah, I don't even know. I don't know who found who first, but I'm always interested in comics in the classroom and people who are educators who are interested in comics. And that to me is like where all the things come together. So that's how we are on each other's radar.
Yeah. Yeah, right. And I got asked to do this really cool thing, so I'm excited.
You're talking about something else?
No. No, I'm excited to be talking to you about one of my favorite comic books growing up. So, absolutely
great.
Cool.
Cool. Yeah, so I'll do the kind of Wikipedia rundown of Icon. I have a lot to say about the context for this, too, because it's definitely like, we're probably around the same age. It's sort of like my era, like my golden age, you know? Like, I very much remember when this whole, when this universe came out was when many universes were coming out at once. So we'll get into that in a minute. But so Icon is part of the Milestone line, which was a creator-owned sub-imprint of DC Comics. It was launched in 1993. At this time, kind of Image Comics had come out, and there was like this mad rush for new comics universes to come out. There's Ultraverse and many that you can't remember. Defiant, there was like a deluge of these. And Milestone was unique, partially because it was a creator-owned imprint within DC. And then it was Black creators creating Black characters. So you had Dwayne McDuffie was a creative lead who would go on to do pretty much all the best DC animated stuff, mm-hmm. which is some of the best, you know, comics adjacent media that's come out ever. And he passed away in 2011. So it all took place in the fictional city of Dakota. And Icon is kind of like the Superman of this universe. And do you want to say more about that?
Yeah, it's interesting the take that they took on this because, you know, Superman is, you know, end of the day, an immigrant story, right? But it's about that assimilation piece. And I think that Icon takes it a step further by imprinting race onto the character. I mean, you know, a lot of us grew up reading Superman and a lot of us know about the the racial defaultness of a Superman, right? Like he's a hero for everybody, but he never had to deal with what might have come with had he, chosen maybe a different skin, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, you know, it was interesting to read this book. I was never a huge Superman fan, mm-hmm. But when they added that wrinkle to it, the first question you ask is like, man, why would you choose like this difficult way to kind of come up? But I think it makes his and how he came into being a hero a little bit more, I don't want to say authentic, but it makes it a little bit more like this is a person who has seen humanity at their worst and still chose to help, which is, I mean, if that's not heroic, man, like, I don't know what is.
Mm. So did you, Superman is an immigrant, but he's a passing immigrant.
Yeah.
And then this is, you know, he could just as easily, no one would know. And so did you, what's your relationship with these? Did you read these when these came out?
Yeah, I read them. So, you know, I grew up reading comics, much as you said, and we are probably in the same age range. I'm 43 this year.
All right.
And, you know, I was reading comics with, you know, energy at that point. Like I was buying them, like I was going to the corner store, the Walgreens, stuff like that. Whenever my mom wanted to keep me quiet, you go, okay, here's, you know, $3, go have fun. And back then, y'all, $3, you could buy like 3 to 4 comic books mm-hmm. and be like happy. So when this came out, you know, I distinctly remember because, you know, I grew up reading X-Men and Archie and all that kind of stuff, right? And to immediately see a universe that was catered towards me specifically, I was like, yo, I'm in. I was like totally ready for that. And it was, you know, really obvious, right? Like when you are reading a comic book, when you see someone who looks like you, it's just an obvious thing. When Bishop came on the scene, like he is still my favorite comic book character, but he was immediately my favorite comic book character because it was like, you don't know it until you know, like, oh yeah, there isn't anybody else that looks like me in this book where somebody is like, has blue fur, right?
Mm-hmm.
So to have an entire universe that is catered toward, you know, kids of color and catered towards creatives of color was like massive to me, especially, you know, during that time when we had like a lot of like this, I don't want to say a resurgence of Black Power movement, but like this Black, you know, celebratory, you know, of Black culture, like was exploding around that time. So we had, you know, Spike Lee's X movie had just come out. Mm-hmm. There was Afrocentricity that was like everywhere. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So when you add that in, it's like, yeah, man, why not? Like, this is just an extension of all the things that I'd seen in music and film and TV during that time. It makes sense to have a comic company that would, you know, capitalize on that too.
Yeah. And it was so based too on creative talent, which is, I think, a thing that's made it something we're still talking about, that Dwayne McDuffie really knew how to build the universe. Like I was actually just, I have an old Wizard magazine that has the kind of hype launch of this line. And they wrote like really extensive background to the city. And you can tell from this, and I think there's a little bit of repercussions, not in a positive way around it, but you can tell that they really, really developed the backstory of everything and had context worked out for everything. And so that was kind of big at this time, I think, too, with all these universes that they always kind of wanted the history of Marvel and DC, but they were creating new stuff. And sometimes there was like a, like Image Comics was always like that. Like someone would show up and they'd have a history with Warblade or whatever, but you're like, what? We don't ever see it. Or like maybe it's on the back of a trading card or you read an article in Wizard. But this does a pretty good job of laying it. But it's just a more like thought out, kind of thoughtful. And you can tell they're in the long game. Like it's written, these Icon comics are very much like, we're going to be unraveling this for a really long time. That Icon and Rocket kind of present two ideologies, and it's about them getting to know each other and understand each other over time. And you can see that they're really have a long game going for that. But yeah, I never read these before. I remember when they came out, there was too much stuff that, and I was all in on Image Comics. You know, I was reading Spawn, and you know, I could probably buy like one or two comics a month. So I missed this whole line, and it lasted maybe 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, if that, you know, after that first year or so, it started to kind of peter out. And you wouldn't think that because, you know, when the static cartoon came,
mm-hmm.
which a lot of people didn't connect the two universes, right? Or the two things.
Yeah.
When the static cartoon comes in, you kind of feel like, oh, well, yeah, this thing was just ongoing. But you could see that there were like signs of them shuttering them and kind of folding. You know, Icon went away for a long time. Like he would show up in the background of like big fights because how could you not have this heavy hitter like show up, right? But he wasn't an integral part. I believe he was in the Justice Society at some point.
Oh, really?
But it was like, you know, it was just one of those things where, yeah, they were starting to kind of fold them back into the universe. And you didn't really see like Blood Syndicate or Hardware. Any of those folks, really, but Static was undeniable. And Icon, again, like I said, if you have a Superman analog walking around out there and you got a cosmic level event. You don't want to just write that person off. So,
yeah, and these characters have come back recently, I think, right?
Yeah, they had a kind of like a reboot. There's you know, been a relaunch of Milestone Media, mm-hmm. and you know, it came from Reginald Hudlin, who was initially a part of, you know, the stuff in the beginning. But Reginald Hudlin, if people don't know, is a director, directed House Party, Bebe's Kids. I know the guy's whole filmography. I've watched a lot of stuff, but integral part of bringing it back. And then, of course, Dennis McGowan. Dennis Cohen. Thank you.
Oh,
yeah. Dennis Cohen is a huge part of bringing it back as well. And this new run is great, man. I liked how you talked about the emphasis on the talent that was a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you look at this resurgence of it, I'm looking at like the people who are creators in this new resurgence. And it's like, yeah, man, these are some great people too. Like mm-hmm. I think it's cool that they were very intent on, in both launches, like bringing in people that were insanely talented creators to make this thing. And again, you know, the new initiative is all about giving creators who haven't maybe had that same access to you know, the big publishers, like a chance to do it. And it's really cool. People are interested, man. I say definitely dig into it. The new run is really cool. And the way that they've repurposed, like how people got their powers, I hate to say it, makes more sense than the old, like the way that the Bang Babies became a thing in the first run.
Yeah, that gets referenced a lot in this, right? Like in the time of the number one issues, because there's four titles, I think.
Yeah, at least four. I know. And the ones I know off the top of my head is you got Icon, you have Static, and you have Hardware and Blood Syndicate.
Yeah, and so in the beginning of Blood Syndicate, there's like a big gang throwdown, and then they all get attacked by the government, right? Basically like hit with experimental poison, and it kills most of them, and then the rest get powers, and that becomes how most of the characters have powers in this universe.
Yeah, and everyone in some way is responding to that inciting event, right?
Yeah, it's like the catalyst for the whole line of books. Yeah, yeah,
which is really cool.
Yeah. So wait, I wanted a couple things you said. One is I have a original Hudlin fun fact I want to share with you, which is I'll tell you this is the house I grew up in, which was my dad's house, which is no longer his house, but it was for a long time, is the house that they have the party in House Party.
Shut up.
Yeah, when I was like seven, they came to location scouts came because we were in LA, and that was my house. I mean, my parents were divorced, and yeah, I didn't live in that house much, but every summer I would go there, you know. But yeah, I got to meet Kid and Play and Martin Lawrence and Robin Harris, all those guys when I was like, and was that 1990? Yeah.
90. Oh, I am gobsmacked. That movie is like one of my favorite movies of all time.
Yeah, I saw a screening of it in Portland a couple years before the pandemic, and Kid and Play were there, and they actually like put up a photo of my dad's house. They're like, oh, a kid's in the audience. Not a kid, a grown man, but you know, this, when he was a kid, so it was cool.
Get out. I would be eating lunch on that story the rest of my life.
I mean, I brought it up anytime I can. I had the opportunity. I was going to get in there. And then the only thing I wanted to say about this line of comics too, which is, again, I'm a little bit quoting the Wizard article, but I think it's very apparent too, is because they have enough kind of characters and material, they do a really good job of subverting the responsibility of how few Black superheroes there are. Mm-hmm. In that, like, Icon is, like, that's the pitch, is he's Black Superman. But because they have four books and they all have, many of them have multiple characters, they're not really, like, Icon doesn't have to represent all Black people as a single character. Yeah. They have some flexibility to have different kinds of characters with different goals and personalities. And I mean, I think Icon, to me, kind of fundamentally is about these ideological differences. I was very thrown in the first issue that he's like a conservative Republican.
Yes.
I don't know if I can get past this. And I believe, I have only read the first six issues, but I believe it sort of is, about him kind of moving beyond that, like in the long game of the story.
Yeah, it's about, you know, this book is, I think, the first time I ever heard the phrase "pull yourself up by your own bootstraps." Right? Like I as a kid had never heard that. So when I saw it in the context of the story, and then, you know, Rocket famously says it's easy to pull yourself up by your own bootstraps when you can fly. Mm-hmm. Like, even as a kid, that floored me. I was like, I don't know what I just read, but I don't. That was amazing, right?
Yeah.
And it is, you know, it is like, again, it goes back to my opening pitch about this, right? Like the idea that you have this superpowered character who, again, lived through and saw the worst of humanity and eventually was, you know, inspired to help, right? But it's one of those things, like, it kind of speaks to the genius of the talent behind this universe, that they all were very cognizant of the, you know, that there is no monolithic way to express Blackness or, you know, or your ethnicity. And they knew that there were going to be people who were like Icon out there, right? Who would look at the quote unquote bang babies and say, you know, get your acts together, pull your pants up, right? But they also knew that there was grace in the fact that if you allowed that same person the chance to actually see their tenets being played out in the real world, right? And give them a chance to actually confront that, then there is a likelihood that they could change and say, like, yeah, I've been doing this whole respectability thing, but I see, like, what people are actually dealing with. And, you know, although I found a way to, like, shelter myself from my people, it's, I think, easier now to say, like, I got to be among people if I truly want to help. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that was like the thing that they were, you know, kind of playing with. Because, yeah, man, I mean, you know, growing up, I knew people like Icon. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. You knew, like, the more established, older, you know, Black folks who might have forgotten where they came from or never forgot, but were selfish about, you know, hey, I made it out, so... Mm-hmm. I'm going to continue to do what I can for me. And again, this is a character who lived through slavery. And if there's anyone who could probably, you know, fall victim to that mindset would be a person like this, right? Who has had centuries of living and, you know, has ostensibly still made it to be this wealthy person, right? So he's probably thinking, man, I came from a different country and, you know, came from a different planet, came through the same things a lot of y'all came through, and I'm still, like, you know, able to overcome things, right? But when you look at what Rocket kind of points out to him, you know, you still had a privilege that allowed you to be able to overcome this, right? So even with your setbacks, even with, you know, coming to a different planet, being an outcast, you can fly, man, mm-hmm. and you won't die. So you are living your life differently than someone who also went through slavery, but whose life is finite and who has been systematically, you know, taken advantage of, held down. If they had those same abilities, then yeah, maybe you would have a leg to stand on here. But I think that's what was really cool about Rocket and Icon is the tendency is to say, like, oh, well, Icon is the superhero here and Rocket is the sidekick. Mm-hmm. But the, you know, as you read through this book and, you know, in the reboot and all that kind of stuff, I think people are starting to really key in on the fact that, like, Rocket is the superhero mm-hmm. and Icon is just, like, not the sidekick, but he is. I mean, she leads him. Without her to lead him, you know, into being a hero, into doing the right thing, he's in his mansion, just being rich.
And she's definitely the main character of this. And also, she's more relatable. She's like a real yes. person that you can. And I mean, I think it does a good job because Superman is not a relatable character. Like, you see Superman, yeah. and you say, can never do what he does. So this is a take on Superman, and that's a smart... It's a smart approach, yeah, to say he's, and I like that too, that opening of, like, he's in his ivory tower, you know, he's contributing, but it's from this, you know, sheltered place of being a high priced lawyer, and he's got these conservative views, and then he gets out into the actual world, is interacting with people, and that's where the change comes from. It's cool. Yeah. No, it's a really clever setup. And yeah, we'll get into the nuts and bolts, but I think we'll just get into the first issue. You feel ready?
Yeah, let's go.
All right, let's go issue by issue. Do you have these in single issues?
Yes. So I actually have it. I have both of the collections.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also bought Milestones compendiums, which are big boys. I haven't even cracked them open yet. But yeah, I bought these as the collected editions the second that they were available digitally.
Oh, cool. So you have digital. Yeah, I just have them on the DC app, which I have mixed feelings about, but it makes it easier to do this show.
Yes.
So the opening is 1839. It's really interesting because it's all wordless.
Yeah, and we see that 1839, but we're looking at spaceships and aliens.
Yeah, really, and there's cool. I don't know if we later get more background on this space conflict, but we see this blue kind of formless alien, not formless, but he's got no real features.
Yeah.
But he's escaping some kind of ship that's blowing up, crashes into the Earth, and takes the form of who he sees. And he turns into a baby, though, which I thought was a little strange.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, especially because he is a, from our point of view, an adult humanoid alien, right? But we do get context later because he was like a, I don't want to say cop. He was almost like a lawyer-ish, almost more like Tommy Lee Jones's character from The Fugitive, like that kind of that's what this blue character was.
Okay.
He's escaping that conflict. So probably using his, you know, knowledge as a law enforcement officer and recognizing situations like, all right, well, this is the planet I'm on, and the most the best way for me to be welcomed into this person's life will probably be as like a baby, I guess.
Okay. Yeah. Cause a woman finds him in the field. She's a black woman, and he takes the form of a black baby.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming she's holding him. I'm assuming she adopts him. And then we jump to 1993.
And he's holding those shackles, while he's daydreaming about his former life.
That's right. Yeah. And you get some interesting. Yeah. And this is where you talk about how he likes Rush Limbaugh, which I was immediately like, okay, I gotta make this work. Gotta make this work for me. And then we meet Raquel, and she's 15, which I thought was interesting. She's really young. And we don't spend a whole lot of time with her. She's got some friends, and they're going to rob. So the Big Bang is happening, I think. Right. So they're going to take advantage of the
chaos.
The chaos, and they're gonna go rob a big house.
And it's a really cool juxtaposition of like Icon and his colleague are essentially talking about this, right? About this, how easy it is to minimize people to their circumstances, right? And now we have the street level playing out of their ideological conversation. We have people who are like, yeah, we're going to actually go out and take our stuff, or take something that belongs to us, or what they think belongs to them.
Yeah. So then they're robbing the house, and Icon comes out, and they assume he's the butler, which is interesting exchange. And then this is the first of many times that Icon will get shot or stabbed. He seems to he seems to take a lot of direct hits throughout this whole thing. And then
at some point, he's like, I'm tired of getting shot.
Yeah, he's always in his chest, too. He's getting shot or stabbed in the chest, like every issue. So then he basically just pulls out his powers, and he takes out all these. It's just three people. Yeah, it's three kids who are robbing him. And his green robe kind of becomes the precursor to his cape. That's the other thing, is he's got a real like Todd McFarlane-y cape, I would say. Yes. That. Yeah.
Yeah, it is really cool. Like you can see what the mode of the day was. Todd McFarlane was, you know, him and Jim Lee were like the ones to emulate at that point, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he's got like the billowy bunch of triangles cape, you know, it's like, and like way too long, like absurdly long.
Yeah.
But it's his robe at the beginning. So he lets them go, right? He tells them pretty much, you can never commit any more crimes and never tell anyone that you came to my house and I was flying around and stuff. And he just assumes they'll go along with it.
There was a really cool or interesting moment. And I think they do that a lot throughout this book. And again, it speaks to the genius of Dwayne McDuffie. Is the name of the book is Icon, right? So we know that symbol, a symbol that stands for something more than what it is. Mm-hmm. And then you have, you know, Icon or Augustus talking to these four kids and saying that they are, their behavior reflects poorly on our people, mm-hmm. right? And, you know, this is McDuffie playing with that idea of like, you know, you have to be a representative of all Black people in all of your behavior, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, we have this duality of that because you got Icon essentially like saying that about these folks and having to, like you pointed out, like maybe not necessarily having to do that in a world that's full of Black heroes. Mm-hmm. Like he is an iconic, but doesn't have to be like the Black superhero. So it's really cool that they like are immediately thrown in our face. Like there's this idea of, you know, do people have to be the thing that stands for like what everybody sees as that example? Or is it that, you know, these are some kids who are making some bad, you know, choices as themselves and not as Black kids?
Yeah, sort of being burdened with the responsibility of all this association that's been thrust onto you. And I think that's what I like best about this series is that it's really a conversation, like a larger conversation about, you know, representation and what does this mean, but within a fun story. Like it does a really good job of being genre fiction and having a deeper, and you can read it and not really think about that if you don't want to, but it's there.
Yeah,
it's what the thrust of the story. So this all happens pretty fast though. So then Raquel goes home and just really gets into this idea of like, I'll be Rocket and you'll be Icon and you'll be a superhero. And she goes back to him and pitches it to him. And he's just like, all right, it's pretty fast. Remember when I robbed your house the other day? Now I think we should be a superhero team. And he's like, ah, okay, yeah, let's do it. I think this could have been like a 48 page first issue. It's good because it gets you through it, right? You get to the, because it's also surprising to me that like we don't see Icon in his costume till the very end and he doesn't really do anything in this issue because then they go out in costume. So he builds her something where she has like a force field. That's her. Mm. He builds some technological device where she's got this cool force field, which I like a lot as an ability, and it absorbs kinetic power and can return it.
Yeah, it's that's easy shorthand for a comic fan to go, oh yeah, I get it. Yeah, absorbs energy, shoots it back out. Done.
Yeah, that was everyone's power in the 90s too. I feel like the X-Men then were always like shooting purple rays, but they're always like absorbing kinetic energy and then return. That's like always what the answer was. So then they go pretty much to help the police with, right, the mayor's being held hostage. I don't know if we know that yet, but something's going down like at City Hall, and Icon and Rocket go to help, and then the SWAT team pulls guns on them.
Yeah.
And that's the, and I bet this never happens to Superman is what she says. Yeah. That's the end of the, but it's a weird, it's a smart cliffhanger climax, but it's a little bit of a weird first issue just in terms of showing these characters and what they can do, because we don't really get to see them do any superhero stuff yet.
But it's also like, we know we got a lot of ground to cover. Mm-hmm. And, you know, would it have been easy, I guess, for them to show street level crime? Yeah. But that kind of goes against what the point of the book is, right? Like, it's this idea, if you're here to help people, then you shouldn't be out patrolling for purse snatchers and all this, like the small level stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Your job is to be the Icon. Like, you changed my life by seeing you. So other folks should see you doing good. And doing good doesn't necessarily mean that you're stopping the bodega from being robbed. Doing good means you got to go and like be the hero for everybody and do something big. And I thought that was a cool choice. You're right, though. 48 pigs would have been nice.
Yeah, I could have. There's just a lot there, and I think they balance it pretty well. We'll talk a little bit more. There's some stuff coming up that I feel like is a little too quick, but we'll get to that. But I think it's economical. Like, they made smart choices, and they thought a lot about, like, what is the impact of this story we're making? So
yeah.
Rather than go, I mean, there's a fight scene. He stops the kids from robbing his house, and we see his powers. But rather than going, like, okay, we need to start with, like, there's several very long fight scenes in these six issues too,
yeah.
But the first issue really is less about showing off what these characters can do and more about, like, who are they? What's their story?
Yes, that's perfect, actually.
So then issue two starts with Norman comes in and he takes the mayor hostage. That's the background of what's happening. And then we go back to now, which is Icon and Rocket are trying to help. And then the SWAT. So, and then this is a runner through the whole thing too. It's the Shreds is the special heavy equipment rapid emergency. That's like one of the things that was sorted out in the creation of all these books. Is there's like a SWAT team called the Shreds, and there's all these rules of the city and what's there. So we'll see the Shreds over and over again, I think.
Yeah. And that's also very 90s, right? That just like we got to give our police force a cool but threatening name, like the Shreds.
And they need to be really good action figures. Like, if there is going to be action figures of this, they'll be the Shreds figures, and you can buy a bunch of them because they're kind of, yeah. They're like foot soldiers, sort of. Yeah. So then they fight the Shreds for long, long time. This is like most of the issue.
Which again speaks to what the creators were trying to accomplish, right? They knew that if they were going to write this book and write this universe, then they needed to deal with particularly like what would a Black superhero's relationship be with law enforcement, right? Mm-hmm. Especially one that is showing their face, right? So it's there's some suspension of belief we have to do already with the powers and the aliens, right? But they were like, we're not going to make you do that with the police force, because, you know, they had to at least reckon with the idea that you're not just going to show up and the police are going to take your help. You're not Superman. You're not Green Lantern. And at this point, I mean, of course, John Stewart was a thing, but that's just, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, even in John Stewart's initial, you know, introduction, they had to reckon with this. So it was like, all right, yeah, if this happened, if a Black superhero just showed up, police would not immediately trust you.
They no, I mean, yeah. It's a really sadly true circumstance. Like, you got two Black superheroes showing up to save the mayor, and they end up having to fight the SWAT team for, you know. It's also true that in the early 90s, this is what kids wanted. They wanted an issue-long fight scene. So it's also kind of satisfying and again, they do a good job though of really laying out circumstance and story. They're trying to reason with the cops, and Icon and Rocket have different approaches to it. And then ultimately Icon turns himself in, right?
Yeah. And it's interesting again, because, you know, it's very of his time. At some point, Rocket even says, you know, I ain't Rodney King. Like, it's mm-hmm. they're speaking for what is currently happening.
Mm-hmm.
And Icon, you know, essentially just says, all right, well, you're not going to listen to me. And this is the best way for me to try to gain, you know, your trust. Still kind of operating in that respectability, you know, realm.
Yeah, and that she doesn't agree, like, that. They have these two different, there's a section in here. I should have wrote it. I'm sure I wrote it down in my notes, but it's in the first issue where they're talking about, I think it's Booker T. Washington and W.B. Du Bois.
Yeah.
And that's really smartly done, where they're essentially coming from these two schools of thought and they're playing that out in there. Yeah, he says, W.B. Du Bois, I'm more of a Booker T. Washington man myself. And it's just like a real, lays out their ideology, like that they're these two different. Anyway, I'm just saying the same thing. But so she doesn't turn herself in. But then she helps the cops when the shreds or whatever when they're failing to help the mayor. So then they go in there. Icon and Rocket end up going in to stop this guy, and he turns into a big monster. And that's the end of the issue, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and it gives us our kind of first shot at, like, okay, to your point, but we're gonna see some real action out of this hero.
Yeah, but also the kind of ambiguity of this conflict, where there's a question of, I think they get into it in this one. Why is he mad at the mayor? And it's essentially because the mayor allowed the Big Bang to happen.
Yeah,
and as a result of that, this guy is now this monster creature. So that it's not about simple good and evil, and we're good, and this guy's evil, and we're going to stop him. But it's more about this implications of people in power's actions and things like that. Like,
yeah,
I really liked that about this. That we kind of so yeah, and his name is Kevin. Kevin is the threat, right? He's this big monster named Kevin. I think he does have a villain name, though. Right? Payback, maybe, is his name?
Yeah, it becomes Payback.
Yeah.
But I love the idea of just letting the character be named Kevin. Mm-hmm. Could you just imagine, you know, Captain Marvel shows up and it's like, beware the wrath of Gary.
Yeah, exactly. Just a normal awesome name. Yeah, Kevin is a big monster named Kevin. I like it. So then, yeah, he cuts Icon's chest open with his claws. And then Rocket takes him on. And I love her force field power. I just think, I don't know why I've always liked powers like that. But then, so she kind of fights him to a standstill and he takes off. Kevin runs off. And she goes to follow him. And then, and Icon has healing powers too. He heals really quickly. So yes, then that
he's tough. He's not invulnerable.
Yeah. But he recovers easily. So then she goes down into the sewers to get Kevin, and she gets him to give up pretty quick. Actually, he surrenders pretty quickly. And then Icon helps the mayor. There's some really nice pictures of his cape blowing in the wind. His cape's about 30 feet long. And then, so Kevin gives up and explains what happened, though, about the tear gas and how he was mutated. I think they ask him to give himself up, and they say, we'll help you to kind of out this story. And
yeah,
so he goes along with that. So they're trying to do it like by the books. Although then it goes to 2 weeks later and Icon's being honored by the city. We don't hear anything more about what happens with Kevin. And this feels a little quick, too. Icon's sort of done one or two things now, but he's being celebrated by the whole city.
But it's also, again, like, you pointed this out, I think, perfectly when you said that they are playing this long game, because we have two issues where, as the reader, we get to see, like, okay, they dealt with some of the controversies that would arise from being a Black superhero. But in the end, we're going to let him be a hero, right? And that's not it, though. Like, it's the long game is we need you visibly to be this, you know, icon that we can put on a pedestal, right, as one of the good ones. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, you still won't be allowed to be fully accepted. And even in, you know, in your methods, which was really cool that they talked through, like, hey, this is what the problem actually is, right? Which, again, gets to the, you know, when people talk about, like, how do we solve policing in our cities? And, you know, there's a longer discussion that could be had. But one of the ways that always comes up is, like, establishing relationships that are built on, like, a shared, you know, connection, maybe not always identity, although that would probably be helpful. But in the instance where it's like, I understand where you're coming from, and my initial impulse isn't to, you know, hurt you or put you in shackles, it's to try to be restorative. And them showing this new way of being a hero initially was like, cool. But then we get on out back in the surface and it's back to, no, we want to put you up as like the hero cop who stopped, you know, save the mayor and stuff like that. Right. And try to like return that status quo. Which, again, is one of those things where it's like, I think you were right. Just this long game that they were playing. Had they had the opportunity. And you see it a little bit in the second volume too, of how there's this tension between this establishment way of doing things versus the way that the folks in Blood Syndicate might want to handle
stuff. Yeah. And it's cool that we have more, you know, regular people on the ground. Yeah. And that the city is very willing to go like, oh, look at this inspiring invincible guy. And he'll give this speech and go, I can fly and so can you. But it's like, well, maybe I can't actually. Like, it's nice that you're providing that inspiration, but maybe you're one of very few people that will reach this level and we're all still down here. And so, yeah, that conversation is cool. It's good that we're spending time kind of unpacking that. And then at the end of the issue, Icon tells Rocket, Raquel, that she's pregnant, which I think I really like where it takes the story, but it did come out of nowhere. I feel that's one of the things where I'm like, that should have been issue 12 or something when that happened. Yeah.
Yes. And it's the thing that has bothered me about this book forever.
Tell me more.
because it's, you know, and again, it's very much in the zeitgeist, right? Because it's at that time we had what people thought was was an epidemic of teen pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the folks at Milestone, I think, just wanted to tackle everything. Mm-hmm. They knew that they had an opportunity to tackle a bunch of ideas, and probably very smartly so, knew that they probably had a limited amount of time. So they wanted to do as much as they could.
Mm-hmm.
So we have this hero who has this choice to make about being pregnant, and we're going to throw it out there and make it a big deal. I wish that it were later. And I hate to say, like, I didn't want her to be saddled with a pregnancy, but that's kind of how I felt. It was like, it was going to change. We just got this really cool character.
Mm-hmm.
And now, like, you are potentially talking about sidelining this person. And that was kind of like, oh man, like, why do we gotta do that? Like, there's so many different stories we could cover. Her friend could be pregnant, but I guess, you know, it wouldn't have been as real, and it would have felt very, you know, after school, especially if her friend was pregnant.
Yeah, it would feel, I mean, they do that a lot, right? Where it's like, they do that on TV shows, like special episodes, where they're like, let's throw this other character under the bus that you don't ever really care about. And it means more when the main characters. Yeah, I just, and I mean, I think the shocking reveal of it is so like, what? Just because we've never even seen her life, really. So we don't know if she's in a relationship or if she's even been, we didn't ever think about if she's having sex with anyone before this. Although there are things I love about it too. I love that the cover of number 4 is a superhero taking a home pregnancy test. Like, I love that. Or I love the idea of like a pregnant superhero. My wife is a nurse midwife, you know, and a reproductive health specialist. So we're always like, I've done a lot of work around pregnancy in comics. So there's something I love about, I mean, it makes you worry about the character so much more though, like any perilous situation. But I like that her power is this protective force field. So there's some relief there. I love what they do with it, which we'll talk, we're about to do number 4. We're going to do the first 6 issues. So we have some more time to unpack this. But that initial reveal, I was just like, what, where did that come from? Like, it's just like, or that I want to hang out with this character more before I see this be the direction. And I don't know where they go with it. I mean, I think like abortion's a big topic, and my thought is that if you're 15 and you're pregnant, especially if you're superhero, you should probably have an abortion. And I don't know if she gets an abortion later or not, or where it goes, but I don't know.
No, this, that the child she ends up having in this reboot of the of Milestone Media is in college now.
Oh, wow. They did like a real time?
Yeah, like kind of ish. Or at least like in certain stories that I've read, like during the, in the Milestone, one of the talent showcases. So, yeah, it's kind of like a real timey thing, which is cool. I agree that it's an interesting thing that they chose to do. It just felt like why now, and why this character? But no, you're right. It adds a wrinkle that we hadn't seen in a while. Like, it, you know what it feels like some Kitty Pride would have done.
Yeah,
and it's like okay, let's read Kitty go through this, right? But Yeah, that the way you pointed out that a mother would have her power set would be protection is like mm-hmm. really cool.
Yeah, and I mean, I like what they do, like where it goes from there. I mean, it kind of won me over, but yes, I mean, we both agree that, you know, could have been issue 12 instead of issue 4. Just stepping aside for a second too, how do you like the art in this series?
I dug it. You know, I growing up, I was always a writer fan more than a reader, an art fan.
Yeah.
And I still consider myself that for the most part. But back then, I just, you know, distinctly remember thinking that it felt very much of the time. Like it looked like an X-Men book, which I liked. So I thought the character designs were really cool. There was some things that I thought were like, authentic isn't the right word, but at least it felt like, okay, yeah, this is a person who knows how to color and draw outside of the usual spectrum that we're used to seeing in comics. But yeah, I dug it. And the fact that the artist's name is Bright is it's like, well, you had to be a penciler or a colorist or something at that point.
Yeah, it's a little, I think the inking is a little weak. Like it's a little splotchy. I mean, it looks like 90s comics, and the visual storytelling is really good. And then I don't know about the coloring though of these comics. Like you can see on the covers, they do this real, looks like maybe colored pencils or something. They really build up the color. But these, I think, are happening at a time where flat colors were going out of style, but not everyone had the digital coloring process. So it's just a little muddy. It looks really dated. It looks like they're 5 years earlier or 5 years later, the coloring would look so much different. Like it really puts them in a precise era, the coloring of these comics.
Oh, it absolutely looks like a 90s comic.
Yeah, it looks like a 1992 comic.
Yeah. You know? No, you're not wrong about that. We also have the distinct, you know, not displeasure maybe, but like disadvantage of not having it on paper.
Yeah.
So we're looking at it just as is, like what the colors present as, right? Like we're not getting any of the effects that paper would give it. If you look at the omnibus, the two compendiums, I think they did a pretty good job of kind of reawakening some of that. But no, you're not completely wrong. The way that the colors, the palette that they choose to use speaks very much to this is a 1992 comic book.
Yeah. And like the highlights and just like the effects on energy and things. Yeah. It's got a real dated quality, but these read really well, these comics. I mean, it's really good visual storytelling. The pacing of the comics is good. So issue 4 starts, she fights some robbers, right? Some people are holding up a liquor store. And she stops them. And she's in denial about being pregnant. So then, yeah, we go to her apartment and it's her and her friend who I don't think has a name even. I don't know if we ever even learned this character's name.
Not then, but later, because she's an important character for her.
So that's another thing. Like we see her apartment. It just made me think about like, oh, we don't know who she lives with, or we had not seen her home life at all. And now she's already pregnant. Like it jumps, you know, we made that same point a bunch of times, but I like this. I just love seeing a teenage superhero have to go to a pharmacy and buy a home pregnancy test. And then she's trying to buy it discreetly. And then the woman at the counter does a price check over the loudspeaker. It's just good writing. You know, it's like, I always like it when superhero characters like experience things you might experience, you know, like live in the world. So I just thought that was a really nicely done slice of life sequence.
Yeah, especially because, you know, she points out earlier in the issue, I can't be pregnant. How can I be pregnant and I can do this? And like she's flying around and stuff, right? Mm-hmm. But like you just pointed out, it's cool that like, no, you may be a superhero, but you also have to deal with this very real thing.
You should have had her force field on then, but and then we get some of the kind of legal background of Icon and his regular, he's going to defend Kevin, right? So which is probably a conflict of interest, but we're starting to build up that story a little bit. And then I think that's the main. Oh, and we meet like a reporter character who I think will come back, Miss Chaplick, right? Yes. At the Chronicle building. So he's kind of touring around getting some background info. And then Josh Thompson, head of Grind, the police department's gang task force. So we just get a little more like world building as Icon's on the case of Kevin's trial.
So we have Shred and Grind.
Shred and Grind.
Wow.
And then I love this. And then she's taking the pregnancy. It doesn't look blue to me. She's like, girl, it's blue. I think that's such a, when we took the first pregnancy test, when my kid was conceived, I was like, I don't know if that's the line or not. You know, so I don't know. It's just something you go through. And then, so her grandmother's there. Oh yeah, we get, not this issue, I think the next issue, we get a really good scene with the grandmother. So we confirm that she's pregnant. She gets a positive pregnancy test. And then Icon meets Wise Son from Blood Syndicate. And there was a rule in the early 90s, a very official rule of all comics, that if, or as I think this was established in the 60s, that if two characters from different superhero titles meet, they have to start fighting right away. And pretty much for no reason. They're not for any valid reason. But so, and that's where we end up, is that Icon runs into Blood Syndicate and they're about to fight for two issues.
Yeah. And it's for people who are trying to like really navigate this world. If you look at from a respectability politics, angle, Icon was going to run into Blood Syndicate and fight anyway. I know your rule is in effect, absolutely. But there is no way that like this guy who wants to be like the new iconic version of what, you know, Black excellence is supposed to be, there's no way he's going to have like essentially a gang police force just out there operating and he doesn't run into them at some point. In this instance, at least it's more of an investigative at first, you know, impulse. And not a, I got to go take care of these kids type thing.
Yeah, they're crossing paths for the first time. And it's like, what's their dynamic going to be? That's like probably, if I talk about Marvel and DC Comics now, this is my old man rant or whatever. They're like, they never just let you buy one comic, you know, and it turns into all this stuff. Yeah. But I thought that this really, it helps that I have all these digital, I can just read them whenever I want. But I thought it did such a good job of making me go like, oh, these characters are really interesting. And I actually want to read their story now. And it seems like, and I think four titles is a good amount of titles for a universe where you might actually read the whole thing. Like,
yeah,
it seems like I felt like, oh, I wish I was reading all four of these titles at this time. And it seems like it would have been really fun to follow all these books and watch the characters interact and that they're all in the same setting. So I thought it worked very well and organically as like your kind of obligatory character crossover.
Yeah. And it didn't feel like an event book where you got to read, you know, you don't have to go and read Blood Syndicate to get this story. Like it all happens here. We don't need to go and rehash it out over there. Like we got it.
Yeah. It wasn't like Icon number 5 and then Blood Syndicate number 5 and then Icon number 6. So then we start with Rocket Raquel on sitting on the swing. So her grandmother kind of off screen found out she's pregnant. She was coming in the room at the end, but and we're just getting a little context. And then Icon is pretty much just fights the blood. I think for two issues is what's about to happen.
Yeah, that is an unfortunate splash page for the title of the issue where it says, "May we bang you?
May we bang you?"
It's like, oh man,
it's not the story I thought I was. And then they have a talking dog on their team, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, they do.
He's called Dog with two D's. Oh, and they do. This is another really early 90s thing. There's a caption next to everyone that says their name. That's like straight out of 90s X-Men. Like,
yeah,
let's get every character's name. Brickhouse, Boogeyman, Third Rail. But they seem like pretty interesting characters. Those books?
Yeah, they are. If I had to like rank them, Blood Syndicate was probably fourth on my list.
Oh, okay.
Just because it was an interesting look at the the superhero like teen book, but for me, especially growing up during that time, like I had enough gang imagery out there. Like I was just like, I don't need to read this book. Like this is, there's, you know, hardcore hip hop has a lot of, you know, gang image. There's Boys in the Hood. Like it's everywhere. And that wasn't me just being like a fuddy-duddy. It was just like overload. It was like, it's everywhere. So like, so to now have like a superpower gang, and that was just me reading at face value. I was like, I don't need that. Like that's, it's fine. Having revisited it through the compendiums, it was a really cool story that I think needed better PR. Because when you look at like the history of a lot of gangs back then too, you know, a big portion of why they started were similar to other political movements. It was, there's no one here who was taking care of our neighborhood, so we'll do it. And of course, we, you know, intersplice, you know, drugs and petty neighborhood abuse in it, and it changes the dynamics. But at their core, that's what gangs were about, like people looking for some family that would protect them. And what this book does is extrapolates that and says, well, what if a gang had powers and they were tired of, you know, police and other people coming into their neighborhood and, you know, destroying it? And how would we self-police? And it's a really cool idea that I think just kind of gets lost in translation and, again, lost in the just the proliferation of so much like gang-centric media during that time. And I think it kind of fell to the wayside for me.
Yeah. Well, and they're the survivors of this kind of government violent experiment on all of them too, is an interesting idea. But yeah, I hear what you're saying. I don't know, because I do like it as a premise. It seems like a really rich premise, but I can also see that, like, you know, it's a go-to premise for a bunch of young Black characters to be a gang. But it's cool. I don't know. It's interesting. I don't know what much about what they do with it outside of this, but it seems like a rich premise.
It is. And again, like I said, I think they did themselves a disservice by not fully getting out in front like what that book was about, because it's really, really cool.
Yeah.
But if all you see is like a dude holding guns and he has like a X hat, and I think there's a character named Tech Nine or something like that, it's like, all right, man, come on. Like, I don't need this.
There's a couple of white characters. There's like an older white guy called Fade, which I was like, what's he doing there? And then, yeah, and then the leader, Wise Son, has like a Nation of Islam hat, which I thought he wouldn't be in a gang if he's in the Nation of Islam, but I don't know how devout he is.
Yeah, and again, this is during a time where Afrocentricity, and all kinds of things like that are intersecting. So you, there were people who would tell you that, you know, certain parts of the Nation of Islam were connected with, like, you know, especially Chicago. Like, we have a rich history of that, with, like, you know, symbology being very similar. Like, you know, the Gangster Disciples sharing certain symbology with the Nation of Islam. So you, there would be connections. We would go like, oh yeah, that's not a massive disconnect between those two, that there may be some intersections here where they can see, like, I can use these two arms to protect a part of our city, but also be like an outreach place as well. And it's just when you add in those other things like the drugs and the turf wars that it kind of gets lost in translation. But no, this, you know, my city has a history of that. It's, you know, Minister Farrakhan was here. So it's one of those things where it's not completely invented. It's just like all right, let's see what else y'all can do with this.
Yeah, I guess I think of the Nation of Islam as kind of an insular, like it's its own organization and is very rules oriented. So
yeah,
I can see there being a Nation of Islam super team, but it seems a little off to me that someone from the Nation of Islam would be part of this gang with all this criminal activity too.
Well, and when you add in the amount of people who go to jail and find religion, and very often that religion would be the Nation of Islam, but they come back home and they are still very much connected to, you know, their gang family, whether they are, especially if they are higher up in that family.
Yeah.
So you will see that crossover and you will see that, you know, it's it happens.
Fair enough. So then, yeah, Icon's just fighting these guys for pages and pages. And then I love this scene, I got to say, of Raquel and her grandmother. And she's on the swings and she's, I'm giving you a push, which is sort of a visual metaphor. Yeah. And she just lays it out. She's like, I was young and I had a kid. I had a daughter. And then she had a baby when she was young and I had to raise her. It was you. I raised you because your mom is too young. And now you're 15 and you're pregnant. And she's just like, I'm not doing this again. Like, I'm here for you and I'm not going to raise your kid for you. And I don't know. There was just something. It was just a really good character based scene. Like, you really got this dynamic between them and that there's like a love there and she's not abandoning her, but she's like, you're repeating this scenario and it's too hard on me. I don't know. I just thought it was really, there was a lot of depth to that whole scene.
It's real and it's relatable. And it's probably something that many a kid at that time had seen that conversation played out.
Mm-hmm. And it's cool too, in contrast to like just superheroes fighting for 20 pages to go like, oh, okay, here's like a real scene. And then, oh yeah. And then, so this character DMZ who doesn't speak or anything.
Yeah. That was cool.
Yeah. I'm guessing that he's been in, cause we're on issue 5. I think he's been in Blood Syndicate and he's sort of a mystery character, but then Icon recognizes that he's an alien.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was cool. It's like, you get some more character reveals there too.
He notices it from his style of dress. He's like, you're wearing a uniform of this other race that I know about.
Yeah, some other species. Yeah, what are you doing on this planet? And then and we get some kind of demos of the different abilities of these characters, and he's just fighting them for so long. He fights Boogeyman twice and then he just comes back again. he's like and he just knocks him out both times. He's basically like a werewolf guy. Oh, and then I really like this too. Noble is the father of the baby, and so I liked how they did this, because I was like, who's the dad, you know, like, are we gonna find out? And that, you know, they're not like a serious couple, but they've had sex. It just felt really real. Like, okay, she goes and finds him and she tells him, I'm pregnant. And he says, how do you know it was me? And she punches him in the face, which is a little much, I thought. But that was very comic booky, too.
but she got a point across. So.
She did, yeah. And she says, how do you know it was me? And walks away. And I thought that was... And then there's a contrast. And then the next page is Icon getting hit in the face by... I don't even know who this character is. Some sort of shape-shifting. I guess one of them's a shapeshifter. Yeah. And then they knock Icon out and Wise Son says, let's kill him. And that's the end of the issue. And it says, next issue, can't we all just get along? Which is a very famous quote and very of the time. Rodney King said that during the riots. Yeah. And that brings us to our last issue, number 6.
And again, that opening on that, that close up of just Icon's like kind of beat up face is just again, it's like, we don't see stuff like this much anymore. I was lamenting to a friend, like, because I've been reading like older books too.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, what happened to like thought bubbles? Like, what happened to like us getting to hear that rich inner monologue, right? And even like with this, it was like this really cool, like this emphasis on just a different way of visually telling the story of like, we're going to close him in this face, and then we know as comic readers, we know the next page is going to be like a big massive pull out, right?
Uh-huh.
And it was, and it was like, oh yeah, it was like the old version of, yep, that's me, you know what I mean? And they pull out and it's like, all right, we're back in this precarious situation, which was, it was just a really cool like throwback to how they used to tell stories back then.
Yeah. Do you think, I mean, it's so easy. We're around the same age to go, ah, they did it better in our... Do you think it's just because we were 10 when we read these that this is how we think it should be done? Or
you know what? because I'm a teacher and I'm around kids all the time, I'm always in the approach of, I never approach things from they did it better. Because it's, to your point, I think you were about to make, it's like we grew up having it being done that one way. Mm-hmm. I won't say it's better. I will say I preferred it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because it's a thing that I can at least say I miss. Comics now, and these are fast, right? Mm-hmm. But comics now feel faster.
Like much they, so, yeah, much
they
more
have
so.
To like get through everything. And I'll get through a book and go like, what did I just do for 3 minutes? Like it just flies by. Like this stuff makes you take in every single thing that's happening. And for better or worse, it's a thing that I just prefer, because now I feel like I consume modern comics more than I read them sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if they maybe use some of those older techniques or older things, it would make it feel less like consumption and more like the thing that I talk about all the time with comics that makes them great, is that you can stop and really investigate and just live in an image. And you can still do that now, but there are no speed bumps that make us do that. So like those exposition dumps or those little, you know, info, you know, caption boxes, or even the thought bubbles used to make us like luxuriate a bit and kind of like think about what's happened a little bit more. Whereas now I'll be talking about comics with friends to go like, yeah, what happened in that issue?
Like, mm-hmm.
It's harder to kind of like trace the action sometimes even.
No, that's one of the things that struck me about this, is that it felt like the right amount of content for each issue. Like, yeah, you got some satisfying story stuff. Every issue develops the characters in some way or pushes a certain, like we have a, you know, almost a 3-issue fight scene happening here. Yeah. Right. So that's happening, but it's mixed in with all this other stuff. There's all this character stuff, and we're really invested in Rocket and her being pregnant, and we get background on that. And just the pace of it, it's really true. Like, I felt that so much when I was reading these, like, oh, that's really the right amount. It's not too long or too short. It's like exactly the right amount of content. And I do think comics are, this is before comics were written for the trade. This is like right before that, where you go, okay, you know, we want everything to be 6 issues that kind of works as its own story. And rather than going like, okay, each issue is its own story and they all link up, it's like, okay, over the course of 6 issues, we need to get this done. And so many comics are unsatisfying now. Yeah. Cause you go, okay, you know, Nick Fury's talking to Captain America. That's number 4. And then there'll be a fight in issue 5. And then it's just, that's like, I've been reading Savage Dragon for 30 years. You know, I'm always like, why am I so hooked on Savage Dragon? But I feel like it's the right, every issue is the right amount of content. You get like, it's exactly how long a comic book should be every time.
Where, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, that's the thing that's, and you know, comic books, $4 now. And I don't want to read part 4 of 6. Like nothing happened. So.
I went to one of my local comic shops here, Blurred Underground. And it's so interesting because like you pick up a book and it's like, oh, wow, look at like how much quality is in like this one issue. Like they have like the flat binding now and it looks like it's its own, you know, little graphic novel. But it's like, I still don't think that that's worth $5. Like that's a lot of money for like one comic. Especially someone like me who likes to read digitally more, because I don't like to have stuff to sit around my house.
It's a big one. Yeah. Like I got enough comics in boxes now. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's like, oh man, $5. That's tough. But then it's like when I buy a digital issue and it's $3.99, I'm like, I don't think that this should be $3.99 either. Like it's a bunch of bits and bytes that I just downloaded. Like it's interesting the way things have changed, but I don't want to go too old man comic-y.
I'll just say it's better when we were young. But yeah, I mean, it's all, you know, 6 in one hand, half a dozen in the other. But I do think that point remains that these are well-paced comics that give you you get your money's worth each issue. Which was $2 instead of 4 or 5, but it was still, you know, it's satisfying every time. And they always make you want to read the next one at the end. But so, yeah, we just have, now Rocket's going to fight the Blood Syndicate, and it's just like a tour of the Blood Syndicate members. They don't work together at all, the Blood Syndicate. It's like one at a time you fight them.
Well, and we know too that what they're trying to do is they see that Icon is probably one of their flagship books, and we need you to go read Blood Syndicate. So you got to get these power sets one off.
Like, we'll showcase, But it did work. Like, I might just go read these Blood Syndicates after this, because I'm like, this seems like an interesting premise, and these characters are pretty interesting. It's an interesting team. And, you know, I wasn't like, oh, what is that werewolf guy like? But it seemed like, and again, it felt really organic though. Like, I understand that crossovers are about promoting different things, but there was a reason for them to meet. And it really does feel like everything's happening in this city. There was this catalyst circumstance that launched all these books, and they're going to start crossing. These characters would interact with each other. So works well. So then Icon breaks up the fight by, he has some power where his hand lights up, which no one saw that coming. So they're all like, oh, what am I going to do? So it sort of creates pause for everyone.
It's like, what are you going to do with that big ball of, all the energy, basically.
He makes some kind of a deal with the alien guy. He speaks to him in his own language, and he goes off to do something. And it seems like they just kind of make some sort of a truce, right? The Icon and the Blood Syndicate.
Yeah.
They're like, we're aware of each other. We'll see where this goes. But maybe let's not just keep fighting nonstop and kind of figure out what our relationship's going to be over time.
Yeah. It sets up this really cool, like I said, like this tension between these different schools of thought. And, you know, as comic readers, we grew up, you know, mistakenly, but at least minimizing it down to when it was, you know, X-Men and versus Magneto, of the Malcolm X versus Dr. King of it all. Mm-hmm. But that at least gave us a language to speak about it, right? Whereas when we come in here, like you pointed out, we get Booker T. Washington, we get W.E.B. Du Bois, and they're like, oh, there's a bunch of ways to approach the concept of justice here. Mm-hmm. And we're going to have this tension throughout. Because then when you add in Hardware, who was like the Iron Man analog, that's yet another way to approach this inciting, you know, event, but also justice in this world. And it's really cool. There's the stuff that they were doing at Milestone was, and you're right, with four titles, was really cool, because they were able to build out a universe that was interconnected without feeling too overwhelming. Mm-hmm. And because they were dealing with this one inciting event for most of its life, it was cool to have this thing that was like kind of, you know, we're approaching it from all these different angles, and they start to add in like, what does it look like outside of Dakota City, with like this overseeing group or whatever, which is really cool. It's a thing that I'm glad is back, but it's a thing that back then I didn't know what they were doing, and it was cool to read it. Mm. But having revisited it and, you know, rereading it again with you, was like, oh, this is like some masterful stuff they don't get enough credit for doing.
Yeah, it's, and you know, and I think we're in an era, it seems like comics themselves, I think, like Black Identity in the US sort of makes a comeback every 10 or 15 years, where it's like, oh, okay, let's pay attention for a few years, and we're in some form of that right now. So it makes sense that this stuff would come back. But I always like things that it doesn't tell you what to think, you know, it doesn't go like, oh, okay, so Icon is the right way to be and Blood Syndicate's the wrong way to be. They're in this discussion at the end, and there's different points of view. And I think that's such a smart way too for some Black comic writers to create a line, is to go, okay, comics are historically a very white medium. All the characters are white. So we're going to have a bunch of Black characters by Black creators, but we're not going to present one point of view and say, this is the way to be. We're going to show this conversation. We're not going to tell people what to think, because you can, you can read the end of this and you can go any direction you want. You can say, I'm a Black Republican and I agree with Icahn and these kids need to get it together. Or you can go like, oh, Icahn's kind of a, you know, establishment figure and that these kids are, you know, trying to change things. I like that, that it does. I don't like anything that tells you what to think or that this is correct or this is the way to be. So I think it does such a good job of presenting these different points of view and having the characters play that out and showing natural conflict, but also resolution within that, that they're kind of, there's a truce. That's where they end with. They go, okay, yeah, you know, we've got more to learn from each other. We're coming from different places, but we're together in this world and let's see where this goes. Like,
yeah,
it's really engaging. And then we end with just that, well, you know, there's a discussion about if she can be a superhero anymore if she's pregnant, which is a pretty real question. And then Icahn's going to tell Raquel his whole backstory.
Yeah.
And that's the cliffhanger. And I don't wonder what happens, but we'll end with number six. And this runs for how long? It goes into the 20s, I think. How many issues of Icahn do we get?
Yeah, I only have the volume one and volume two. And I think that goes into like 97 or so.
Looks so like
maybe 20 or so issues.
Looks like issue 42 is the last issue in this, okay, on the app. And then it looks like Dwayne McDuffie writes almost all of it, if not all of it. So, oh yeah, and there's the baby. Yeah, I might keep reading these, which never has happened, I don't think, but I'd be interested. Yeah. And then it seems like, yeah, there's several relaunches. There's Icahn and Rocket in... These don't have dates, but it looks much more. There's Milestone Returns and then Icahn versus Hardware, which might be part of the same thing. But yes, which I think is happening right now, right?
Yeah, it's happening right now. Okay. That stuff is really cool.
Cool. And who's writing that?
Who is writing the current one? You know, I don't know off the top of my head. I'd have to look at my books. And I have like, I got all the collections the other day. Because I've been reading like them in issues, like the season one. I know that Nicholas Draper Ivy does the art for Static, or at least like did the art for the first return of Static. But I don't know about the teams on the other ones though.
So then
I feel like Dennis Cowan is on Hardware as an artist.
Mm-hmm. And then these compendiums you have. John Paul Leon draws Static. That's cool. These compendiums you have, are they all mixed together, the issues? Is it like all the number ones and all the number twos?
Yeah, and I think what they tried to do was tell the entire story of the Milestone universe in order, them like almost like the way you would get a reading order for like a House of X or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of it being, here's Icahn one and here's this one, it's kind of like put together in a way that you could read it and go, oh, I get the whole story of what Milestone is. And they're gorgeous books.
Now I will look into those. It's always tricky, like with Jack Kirby's Fourth World. That's another one. Like it's mm-hmm. easier to keep track of if you read like the first four issues of each series at a time. It's easy to keep track of it as like these threads, but then you see more what they're doing. It's the reading order. Like those are the orders yeah. they actually came out in. So I remember, yeah, Grant Morrison's Seven Soldiers. I remember that one because you're supposed to read it all the number ones and all the number twos. And it was just so much easier to read if you read each. It's a bunch of yeah. four-issue miniseries, so if you read them one at a time. I got my cats fighting in the background here. I don't know how much that sound will pick up, but you hear some.
I didn't even notice, but we're adding some flavor in the background.
Some ambiance. So yeah, we'll start wrapping up. Do you have any kind of final thoughts about this or anything?
No, you know what? I think the one thing that I wanted to point out is I grew up with these books, but it was hard to get them collected again. So if there's any, and I'm glad that these compendiums came out mm-hmm. because for a long time, like I was searching for, you know, like, how do I read these again now that I'm an adult?
Mm-hmm.
And I would go to comic shows and like buy the single issue. So if anything, I mean, my message has always been just read more comics, but
mm-hmm.
we need folks out there like to champion these books that we don't want to get lost to time because they're important characters. They're important, you know, stories to be told. And also like a good way for us to kind of see where we came from as a medium. And I definitely would say go back and check out all these books, because there's stuff that people are not even aware, like how cool they are.
Yeah, well, like I said, it was an interesting time. It's like Image launched, and so this idea of having this new universe, and there was a collector's boom at that time. Like Image launched, and they would sell a million copies. And yeah. So everyone was rushing for the next collectible. So like probably the first issue of all these Milestone books sold really well, or like Defiant or Valiant. There were all the Ultraverse. There were all these different lines of books, and they were mostly terrible. Most of those comics were not good, or there'd be like one good one and a bunch of bad ones. And then the market crashed. Everyone realized like, oh, if 8 million people have X-Men number one, it's never going to be worth anything. Yeah. And this line of books got hit by that market, that comics went from selling hundreds of thousands to tens of thousands, like in the course of a few months. And this is like one of the few new universes of that era that the content is strong enough that it's worth going back. I don't know if there's any other new universe from the early 90s that's true about, because we can read the old Ultraverse titles if you want, but they're not very good.
No, thank you.
So it's cool. I mean, I'm glad we had this opportunity to revisit. And I'm glad one of the things I like about doing this podcast is it gets me to read stuff I've always been aware of but not read. So I've never read these. I knew about them, but I didn't read them. So yeah, thanks for, you had a bunch of suggestions, but I'm really glad we went with this one. Like I might go through and read all of these. They're all on the DC app. So you can just go through all of them.
Yeah, I may have to get that app, because I was going through the Marvel Universe one. Mm-hmm. And I kept thinking like, oh, there's some DC books I really want to read. And I wonder if there's an app for that. So I'm glad to know that there is.
I know. I should get a cut from the DC app. They both, I'll say on here, the Marvel DC apps both have like incredibly bad design.
Yes.
It's like you couldn't design these worse on purpose.
Yeah.
I think the DC one's a little better than the Marvel one, but they're both crazy how bad they are.
Yeah, the Marvel one is tough, especially when you're used to like reading on Comixology, or even like the library apps. It's like this is whatever they're doing at Marvel is tough, man.
And they keep redesigning it, and it gets worse.
Yeah,
like if you're like, oh, okay, I want to read Daredevil number 170, it like takes you like 5 minutes to find it.
Yeah.
It's like you got to go through each issue one by one, like through your it's crazy. I guess we wrapped that up pretty well. So we both liked it, highly recommended. And the question I always ask everyone at the end of this is, do you have a dream run? Have you written comics? Have you been interested in writing comics?
No, I thought about writing like a comics in the classroom type comic a while ago with my buddies. And we're throwing that idea out there. So TM, if anybody tries to steal that. I think that's the closest that I'm going to come. I'm not, I'm not as creative in that aspect. But yeah, we've thought about it.
But, I'll never sing, but, I sing in the car and like, oh, if I can, do you have a run you would want to work on, like in the abstract dream of you being a comic? It's always like, what would your dream run be? So.
Yeah, I mean, if I could work with like an Afua Richardson or something, I would probably write. I'd write Misty Knight, actually.
Mm.
I think Misty Knight doesn't get enough like play, and I think she's really cool. I know she's done like the whole Daughters of the Dragon or whatever, or that one she had with Valkyrie, but I think like as a street level. Character, I think she has some really cool stories that could be told. I honestly would love to see a David F. Walker, somebody take her on and do something cool with her story. But yeah, I'd write Misty Knight. I don't think she gets enough play. I'm glad that like Eve Ewing has written Spectrum and brought her back and stuff like that. So, you know, my hope would be we get more of those characters that are kind of like falling to the wayside to kind of like come out.
Yeah. I'm always trying to get David Walker on this show. I know him. He's a Portland guy.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He is.
Yeah. We were both at the Willamette Week 20 years ago. So I've known him for long, long before he got big in comics. But he's hard to get a hold of. He's a busy guy.
The guy's busy.
So. Yeah. Do you know Eve Ewing?
No, I've only been a super fan. So, Eve Ewing is just an amazing writer that I'm a super fan of, and I'm really digging her run on Black Panther right now.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I love the stuff she did for Ironheart and all that kind of stuff. And mm-hmm. as a poet and as a writer about education, she's just incomparable.
Yeah, she's great. I've had a few communications. I have some people in common with her, so. Had a very mild correspondence with her, but it's always something like, am I bothering you? You know,
yeah.
that level of accomplishment.
Yeah. She never feels like you're bothering her, but you always feel like you are.
I must be.
Yeah.
Well, cool. And where can I find you online?
So I got lucky enough to be the first one to call myself the comic book teacher. Mm-hmm. So I am thecomicbookteacher.com. I'm also at the comic book teacher on Instagram. Those are the two places I'm most active. I do a little bit of, video blogging here and there, but for the most part, those are where I tend to work. This last couple years, I challenged myself to try to feature a Black comic creator that you should know every week. And I've missed a couple weeks here and there, but I've been pretty consistent. I'm up to like 120 so far, which I was like happy to find that there were that many and I can keep going. So that's kind of what I've been working on recently.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you, like, how do you keep that up? Like social media, I get that social media is a necessary thing, but it's like, I don't know. It's like, this is how we promote things now. And this is our connection to the public, but like you're prolific on there and I can never get myself, like, how do you do it?
You know, especially for that in particular, it was a thing that I thought was really important. And I think that's probably what's kept me as consistent as I have been with that. I've let other stuff kind of like be like a thing I'll start and kind of stop and, you know, do less regularly. But the Black comic creators you should know, I felt like was a thing, you know, growing up where I didn't know anybody. Like to me, it was that I didn't know who created comics. Especially not people of color. And as it became important for me, and I would talk to people and they would go like, oh, I didn't know that this person was out there. And it's like, I probably have to keep doing this, right? Because if people don't know that they're out there, then how will people continue to get work? How will they continue to create? And how will we continue to bring up more folks from marginalized groups to know like, oh, this is a thing that people do. And if I want my story to be out there, then I got to be the one to tell it. And, you know, it's been a thing that I push on kids all the time. It's like, you don't know what's out there until, you know, you seek it out, right? And if we don't put it in front of kids and kind of show them, this is a possibility for you, then they won't, you know, seek it out. So that's how I've kept consistent, is that it feels like it's important to me to have it out there.
Yeah, I guess it helps too that you're bringing attention to other people, because so much of social media is like, hey, look at me, like I ate this thing, or hey, look where I went, my life's cooler than yours. So I can see that, like, because I'm an artist, so I'm supposed to be doing that all the time, and it just feels gross. So having it's much easier for me to go like, oh, look at this other person's cool stuff. So
artists,
I can see
are
that.
The worst self-promoters, man. And it's I don't know how y'all like the right people are artists, because if I was an artist, I would constantly be like, look at this cool thing I can do. Because to me, it's a magic trick, right? Because I can't do it. But yeah, y'all are like the most humble, like, yeah, you know, I can draw an entire universe and it just happens. Meanwhile, I'm over here stick figuring it and I don't know what happened with this stuff.
I'll keep that in mind next time. Yeah, because I mean, I think like most artists myself, I'm like, oscillate between like, oh, I'm good at this, and be like, I'm terrible at this, you know, look at this other person's stuff, I shouldn't be showing this to anyone. So it's tricky. Well, cool, everyone should follow you online and check out your blog. You write about comics and education quite a bit, right?
Yeah primarily comics and education. My friends and I are about to really start digging into how to make LitX even more of a presence. So stay tuned for that too. We're going to be doing a lot more work with trying to get people just educated on how to use comics and pop culture in the classroom and, you know, make their classrooms more culturally relevant.
I love it. It's important work. Thanks for doing it.
Absolutely. We got a fight. We got to fight, right? So we got to make sure that our kids are, you know, plugged in and tuned in.
Ongoing. Yeah. Well, cool. Thanks so much for doing this.
Thank you for having me. I can't wait to listen in, and I can't wait to get some feedback. But just, you know, it's just been cool just chatting about a book that I love with you. So thanks so much, Ryan. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
That was a fun conversation with Ronnell Whitaker. Yeah, I liked him. That could have gone any number of ways, I guess, because I didn't know him at all. I mean, he seemed pleasant from his Instagram, but, you know, you never know. But I guess, you know, birds of a feather, people who like comic books, always get along. And also, educators who are all about comics, we tend to be compatible socially. I feel like it worked that way. And it was cool to finally read those comics, too. Those were advertised when I was a kid, but I never read those comics. I totally would read more. I think four series that are sort of running alongside each other but not necessarily intertwined is a good way to do a line of books. I think that's a fair way to do it. So yeah, glad I read those. Hope to hear you will tune in next week on The Runs. You can stream the show on The Runs podcast.blogspot.com. You can listen to us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Rate and review, subscribe, press the like button, all the things that you do. Thanks for being here with me, and hope to see you next week on The Runs.